Hi, this is Paula Natzi. You're listening to Days Gone By on WGBB AM.
Hi, Paulette. Welcome. Welcome to Days Gone By. This is my first interview for the show. I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because you're an exciting person.
Yes, I'm excitable too. I must
and
say.
Excitable. So it should be fun. It should be a hoot.
I'm hooting already. Well, let me tell a little bit about you, and then we'll hear more about you from you. How's that?
Okay.
This is Paulette Ati, and she has been acting and singing and doing all these wonderful things since the age of 3 years old.
Well, just to remind you, it's almost right in the pronunciation, but you know how these artists are. They like to have their names pronounced correctly. It's Ati, as in at coffee?
At tea.
At tea.
Oops. Whoopsies. Okay, let's try that. At tea. Is that perfect?
There you go.
Do I have to wait a long time between the syllables? Do I have to go like at tea? Or can I move them together a little closer?
A little long.
At tea. How's that? At tea.
There you go.
All right. I don't even know, remember what my question was. Oh, I'm so flustered, and it's just my first interview. Oh, goodness. I'll pull myself together. I'm better. I'm good. I like myself, and people like me. Now, tell me about your debut at age 3, Ms. Ati.
Ati at age 3 was already a ham. My parents went to the Catskills. They took me with them. And it was the talent night, and I jumped up on the stage and started singing. And, of course, that applause got to me, and they could not get me off.
So did you take lessons, and did you learn to dance and act and things like that?
Not quite at 3.
Well, when you were 4 and 5. Oh, you are toying with me, Missy. Wow. But seriously, did you have to take piano, or did you want to
take... I did take piano lessons. I took piano lessons for a long time. And it stood me in very good stead, because as a singer, it's easier to learn music and songs when you can read music. You know a little bit about chord structure, and you know also, Peter, that I'm a songwriter and have won for the last 5 years the ASCAP Plus Songwriter Award. And so...
you know, the only thing about an ASCAP that I know is when you pull it out, it's really painful. But seriously, wait <go. laughs>
It depends on if it has a head on it, the cap. Or underneath it.
Wow, wiggle. But tell us, what were some of the songs that won?
One that won, which is a lovely one, is United Are We, based on as a result of 9/11. That was nice because it sort of took care of my needs. But then I needed to do something more, so I wrote a song called United Are We. And then I went to PS1, which was the closest school standing to Ground Zero. And I worked with the kids at PS1 for about 3 or 4 months. And singing, you know, working with music, and it was a fun thing. And at the end of that time, we sang the song.
You know, they won't let me near children. I don't know why. Well, no, I do know why. But anyway.
No, I bet you'd be fun with children.
Jumping along a little bit, I noticed in your bio that at one point you were the voice of the girlfriend of a skunk. Is this true?
It's true.
What? Tell me, how did this happen?
Well, I think that was just a lucky deal, Peter, because I was quite young at the time. I didn't know that much about how hard something like this is to get, you know, to get cast in something like that. And Mel Blanc was the skunk, and he was called Pepe, as in Pepe Le Pew.
That's right, that's right.
And when I got to the studio, and he used to play 4/5 of all of the voices in all of the cartoons that he was in. Sometimes all of them, because he was extremely talented and wonderful. And when I came in, you know, I was not him, you know. He wanted to do my part, too. So he was kind enough to allow me to do my thing, which was things like, oh, you know, and he was chasing, Pepe was chasing after this cat all the time.
Right.
Who didn't want to be near him because he smelled, as in a skunk. So I would do things like, Le purr.
Ooh.
And he would, you know, that would just turn him on some more.
Wait, let's do this. I'll be Pepe,
Yes.
And you, what was the name of your cat?
She was just the cat.
Yeah. What we'll
his
call
romance,
her?
His significant other.
His pussy. Let's say that. You were his pussy.
You might call her that, yes.
Okay. So I'll be Pepe, yes. And I'll be all mon chéri, moi, moi, moi. Well, this is very difficult for me because
you're
female.
No, you got it, Peter. You got it.
Mm,
and he did the mwah, mwah, mwah kind of thing. He would
yes.
do that.
And you go, you do your purring thing.
Yes,
oh, mon chéri, oh, she is hot for me, I can tell. Well, something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, did you do any other Warner Brothers kind of characters or thingies?
For a while, there was looping before they did this, before the subtitles became more famous and popular. But they would do the voices of foreign films, and I did a lot of that. And then one of the things I did, which is quite extraordinary, was Ingrid Bergman's last movie. Now, she speaks English, so I don't know why they wanted me to do the dubbing. But I did her voice, and of course I had to...
Wait, wasn't her last movie Autumn Sonata or some Bergman thing?
I think yes. And I don't know why, but maybe there were things in it that were not... There were, you know, some problem with the soundtrack. And so I had to lip-sync her words, the exact words, as close... I can't do it for you now, I'm sorry, Peter.
No problem.
As close to her sound as possible... And nobody ever knew the difference.
Wow. So well, is this a trait? Did you just let the cat out of the bag? No pun intended. Is it now an open secret like Marnie Nixon in My Fair Lady? Oh, what a musical. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway. So, tell us more. Now, you know, I'm here on the radio by the good graces of my great friend Dave, and he has this lovely radio show, and he talks about theater a lot. But you have done that long, long ago. Tell us about your own theater show.
My own shows? In 1999, I had a one-person show called About Time. It was off-Broadway. We had a 10-week run.
Yeah.
And my musicians were a piano and a tuba.
And that's why it ran 10 weeks. But why a tuba?
Exactly. I had met Don Butterfield, famous tuba player, at Michael's Pub when he was playing the Marty Page arrangements for Mel Torme, which was an 11-piece band. And I used to follow Mel wherever he was because he's so fat. He was so fabulous. So at the... You know, while I was watching Mel, my eye would always divert to the end of the line, which is where the tuba player was. And he had something which you have, Peter.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, it's something very special. It's called joy.
Oh.
And when I would look at him, there was such joy in his face when he was playing. And it just, you know, just so that was kind of like interesting. And when I was leaving, he was packing up his tuba, and we started talking. And then he said, can I drop you off? Because he had his car. He was going back to New Jersey where he lives. And we spent about 2 hours talking.
Oh, sure you did.
And in the course of it, we realized we had a lot of musical affinities. And I had a cabaret show coming up at Broadway Baby. And I'd already had the piano player selected. And I said, Don, would you like to play with me at this cabaret show?
I hope you rephrase that. Wiggle! Yeah. Can he show you his oboe? But, all right, yes.
No, oboe is a, what's that thing that's from Danny Kaye's song that bodes no good? An ill wind that bodes no good, I think.
Well put. Well, and so he said, yeah, and that's...
He said, I'm honored. He said, I never have been offered anything like that. So what we had...
Well, tuba players wouldn't, would they?
They wouldn't. So we had arrangements made. So what was thrilling about this is that the arrangements showed the beauty of the tone of the tuba. Instead of just the oompah, we did some oompahs too, but more we showed, like we had a wonderful arrangement for With a Song in My Heart.
Mm.
And it just was so beautiful to hear that gorgeous, rich sound. And then, being a songwriter also, I wrote a song called The Elephant and the Songbird.
Could you do a little bit of that?
Well, you know why I can't quite?
Why?
I have a cold today.
I'm so sorry.
I promise I'll do it for you another time, if you'd like.
Okay, I will hold you to that.
I will, and it's adorable because it has little trills for the bird And it has bop 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 bop. That's him.
Well, I could be the little trilling bird, actually.
Hi, Dave's Gone By, this wonderful show that you can hear and stream in, has a particular guest today named Paula T. That's me. It's over WGBB, and I'm being interviewed by the wild and wonderful Peter Fitzgerald.
I was asking before, not just about, like, theater shows, but you had a radio theater show, didn't you?
Yeah, I did have a radio show.
What was that all about?
When I first came to New York, I've always loved theater and music. I thought it would be wonderful to, I don't know where I got this idea, but wonderful to interview some of our great songwriters.
And who did you talk to?
Hmm?
Well, who did you talk to?
So I talked.
Come on, Missy, get with the program.
Okay, Harold Arlen, Jerry Bach, Cy Coleman, I'm doing it in alphabetical order, Dorothy Fields, John Green, Johnny Mercer, Yip Harburg.
So, Dish, don't just say names. Tell me some wonderful stories. Tell me some wonderful memories of these people.
Okay, here's a story.
Oh, goody.
That's going to be in my show I have coming. I'm going to be doing a show about Harold Arlen.
Oh.
And it's about his collaborators. And one of the people I became really close to from that radio show was Yip Harburg.
Wow.
Yip, darling man that he was, sort of took me under his wing, sort of became my godfather. He said, "Do you have a godfather, Paulette?" I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "Well, I'm your godfather." And he would take me to the theater and discuss theater with me.
And you should remind people just what a wonderful songwriter Yip Harburg were. I mean, I know he wrote Brother King of Spare a Dime, but what are some of the other things? He was
the number one song of the past century?
Yeah.
Over the Rainbow.
He wrote that, see?
With Harold Arlen.
And that was your godfather, in a sense.
My godfather. And only a Paper Moon.
Wow. It's only a paper moon. Yes, yes, oh, yes. Oh, so tell more stories. Tell more about him and other people.
Okay, so he was not happy. The last song that had to go in for Wizard of Oz was the ballad that Dorothy was going to sing. And he was not... And Harold Arlen hadn't written it yet, so there's a whole big part about how Harold Arlen sweated through coming up with the melody for that. Then he got very excited, and he brought it to Yip, and Yip listened to it, and he says, "No, it's too classical, it's too for Nelson Eddy, it doesn't belong to a young girl. It's not the kind of a song for a young girl." And, of course, Arlen was, you know, crestfallen because he really thought he had nailed it. So the next day, all of a sudden, Ira Gershwin arrives on the threshold, because they were all very close. Arlen and Yip, mm-hmm. and Ira Gershwin went to City College together.
Oh.
And they were very close, and they wrote together.
How close were they? Well, okay. Yeah.
Well, as close as peas in a pod. In whatever way you want to call it, but I call it very good friends.
Fair enough.
Fair enough?
I can wink. Okay, fair enough.
Thank you. They played it for Ira Gershwin, Harold, and Carol thought, "Oh, my God, this is death." And he describes it, and he laughs about it on the radio show because he really thought that this was the end, and it turned out to be the beginning because Ira said, "It's a perfectly fine lyric. It's fine." He didn't say it's great. He said it's perfectly fine. And then, of course, Harburg put his 2 cents in, to say the least, and wrote the wonderful lyrics. So this is the song he resisted, remember? He didn't want to do it.
Right.
So toward the very end of his life, I was having carrot juice that he made for me, and he was very unhappy because his two main composer collaborators, Harold Arlen and Burton Lane, were not active anymore. They were alive, but they were not doing anything. And he said, "I need someone to write with. I need a composer." And I said, "But yes, there are many wonderful composers who would love to work with you." And he said, "Yes, but where can you find someone who can write bum 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 pa bum bum?"
Mm. A song like that comes around only once in a lifetime.
That's true.
Oh, now you've got me thinking about Judy Garland. You can make me start me thinking about Judy Garland. Oh, excuse me. I need a moment. I need 2 moments. Okay, I'm better now. Tell more stories. Quickly. I don't want to obsess over Judy. Did you ever interview her? Did you ever meet her?
I did meet her.
How was she?
This was at the end of her life. And I was sitting at the table next to Harold Arlen at a do, you know, one of those big events that was at the...
Well, I make a do. It's a big event, let me tell you.
If you were there, it would have been even been bigger.
Thank you.
It was at Lincoln Center, and she was the singer. And this was at the point in her life, this is, you know, at the very end, where she couldn't sustain notes, and she forgot lyrics a little bit.
Kind of like Ashley Simpson, basically.
Like whom?
Like Ashley Simpson.
Yes.
Over the head. Okay, no problem.
Over my
Keep
head,
going.
I'm sorry. Explain that one to me.
Oh, and she was a singer on Saturday Night Live, and she forgot, the band got the thing wrong, and she got the thing wrong, and then she started doing a hoedown.
Oh, that's cute.
The operative term being ho. Yes. Oh, you haven't heard about it? Oh, well.
No, look at what I missed.
Yeah.
We'll have to have more discussions on our own.
Plop culture.
You'll fill me in
yeah.
on your memorabilia.
Well, I filled a few people in, but they weren't of your persuasion. But, you know, no, but okay, so we're sitting next to Judy. And
she's singing, and I am sitting next to Harold Arlen, even better.
Mm-hmm.
And when she started doing this thing, and he was there, of course, to be supportive of her, and he loved her. She was wonderful, and gave him a lot of hit records, and she was just wonderful. So when she started doing this, he just put his hand over his face because he didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to show his how it hurt him to hear her do that. And so I did have a chance to meet her.
So who, apart from Yip Harburg, who was your favorite all-time guest or famous person that you talked to?
I also love Dorothy Fields. I particularly loved her because, well, she was very modest about her extraordinary talents.
Kind of like me. Wiggle!
And she appreciated the fact that I had done a lot of research on her. And we also became friends. So that, I'm assuming, since I'm your first guest, Peter.
Yes,
your first
one ever.
Mm-hmm.
One
of the very nice things is that you potentially can be friends with some of the people that you interview. And I nominate myself to be your friend.
Oh, good, because I always hit my friends up for money.
Dave's gone by. Paulette Atty is the guest, and it's on WGBB AM. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Let me ask you a question here. I also noticed in your little bio thing that you were...
My big bio thing.
Your big bio thing. I have a big bio thing, but we won't go there. You were the first friaress. Tell.
I was the first woman to become a friar, and how that happened...
Yes.
...was that I was in Los Angeles filming General Hospital. And I heard that the Friars Club was opening their membership to women. So I had to apply. My father knew someone who was active in the membership, and he nominated me and got me a second. And then I had to go before the board and talk to them. And I said, you know, and they asked me why did I want to be a friar and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I hear that they're maybe opening up the clubs in New York, where I mostly live, and there's the Friars Club and the Players Club, which is a wonderful club, by the way. And they said, someone jumped up and said, this is how I knew I got it. He said, don't join the Players Club. The Friars Club has better food.
There you go. Oh, my goodness. So has it been, have you been active in the Friars?
Yes, I've been active. I should tell you another funny story.
Oh, please.
It was 9 months before they opened it in New York. So for a long time when I went back to New York, I was the only female who could go there before 6 or 7 o'clock and take a look at, you know, the monastery or have lunch there. And some of the guys didn't like it that much. So I mostly stayed away, except one time when I was being shown around by Jean-Pierre Trebeau, who was the executive director of the Friars Club, and he brought me into the first time I was there in New York, and he brought me into the card room where there were guys who were heavy into a game of poker, and nobody looked up. They were all with their cigars and their cards, and you would love this kind of a place.
Ooh, the big cigars is getting to me, yeah.
And one of the guys, without missing a beat or looking up, said, what's she doing here? And he, and Jean-Pierre Trebeau said, gentlemen, this is the future. And I will never forget him for that. He was a, you know, wonderful to say that.
That was very nice. That
wasn't
was
that sweet?
Sweet, sweet story.
And you know, I took a lot of gaff at the beginning. Because there were, it did not get by, they did not happily invite women in. There was always a certain group of people that resisted. Now they're delighted that women are in because we have some great women.
Well, who gave you the toughest time?
The toughest time?
Yeah.
I won't say his name, but a very famous...
Oh, come on.
No, I don't want to say his name. But a very well-known comic. Because it's not a nice...
Still
name.
Alive?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Ooh.
And we were working on the bill together in Florida. And he knew that I, you know, I was very happily, proudly went up to him and I said, because he probably didn't know yet, you know, I'm a member of the Friars Club. And he said, why did you want to join this? Why don't you have your own club?
Ooh.
And this is the guy who I was working with every night. And he, once he knew that I was a friar, he was very unhappy with me. Instead of being welcoming and welcome to the club kind of thing, he just didn't like it.
Well, you're going to have to tell me off the record who this is.
Off the record, I'll tell you, but not on.
So speaking of the friars, do you have your version of the aristocrats joke? Come on, I can edit the, you know, the dirty words out later.
What's the aristocrats joke?
Oh, come now. Oh, don't tease a teaser. You've heard about the movie, the Aristocrats.
Go ahead, tell me.
Well, no, there's apparently this joke that has been going around since the old days of Bob Hope and vaudeville, even before then. That's just only comedians have told to each other until recently. And it's all about a person who goes into a talent agent's office with his family. And the talent agent says, well, what do you do? What is your act? And then they do all these incredibly despicable and disgusting things. You've never heard this joke. This is the joke that friars tell each other. I guess because you're a girl.
Well, honestly, there's so many jokes about like that. About the dog act that they bring into the agent's office.
Yes.
You know that one?
No, tell me.
Well, that's where the dog does... and there's another one. Oh, I'm going to tell you another one that I think that I've heard also... an ancient one, but funny. This is more your taste, actually. This
is more your style.
The guy goes, he's billed as the man who has the most orgasms with women.
Whoa. Oh, right? It was good there for a moment, but then you brought the women
most,
in.
Orgasms of anybody. And they fill the theater up with people to see this. You know, he does one right after another. And then the next, and then the next one comes up, and then the next one comes up, and the big night comes, and the theater...
comes being the operative term, yeah.
The theater is crowded, every seat is filled, and he after about the 40th woman, he passes out. And the manager of the theater comes up to him, and he said, what happened to you? I had to give the money back. He said, I don't understand it. He says, it worked out perfect in the afternoon during the dress rehearsal.
That's funny. That's very cute. Next time you go to the Friars Club, ask Freddie Roman about the aristocrats joke and have him tell it to you.
Well,
just make sure you're sitting down.
No one can do it probably better than Freddie.
Well, no, that was the thing of the movie where it was the Hugh Hefner roast and Gilbert Gottfried was closing the roast and he did the joke. And it was so close after 9/11 that people were shocked he was doing it, but it just made everybody laugh all the more. I would say all the harder, but that would put a very different image in my head, if you know what I'm saying. So tell me, you've written a book?
Yes. It's now we're getting into a different territory here. It's called The Seven Keys to Live a Masterful Life.
Seven Keys to Living a Masturbatory Life. That's me. No, wait, say that again. I think I might have missed the word there.
The Seven Keys to Live a Masterful Life.
Oh, masterful. Sorry. And what are the... Give us four of the keys, and then you have to buy the book to get the other three.
Okay. The first key, this is a little, you know, as I said, this is a change from the show business, although I use a lot of examples about music and the theater in the book because I know so much about music and the theater. So there's some wonderful examples. But the first key is... Are you ready for this?
I'm bracing myself.
Okay, it's called Disidentify. but means that you can still be part of an experience, but not be emotionally charged by it.
Well, that sounds kind of a dull way to live, you know? I think I would rather be attached and into it, as it were.
Well, I mean, so the idea of to disidentify is that you don't get caught up in the whirlwind of ups and downs, highs and lows, depression.
I do that every hour of the day.
I know, Peter, and it's fun. But it is fun. I do it too. But there are times where to save your soul, your body, and your spirit, and your, you know, just your well-being, it's good to look from a higher vantage point and perspective of things.
So in other words, it's sometimes good to be on top. Okay. What about number two? What's number two?
Is faith. If it's not blind faith, you know, you're not just doing it because you're told that you're supposed to believe in this or that or the other. But faith is, like, again, a higher level. It's like disidentify as a higher level of detachment. Because when you have true faith, you don't always have the five senses confirming that you're right. It doesn't always show up in your eyes, your ears, your nose, and your sense of touch.
It does if you've had a good weekend like I have, but you know, okay.
Okay, then the next one is an easier one, which is love.
Oh, well, now we're on the same page.
Okay.
Wiggle, love, yes, love.
That's an easier one.
And then four?
And four is something that you also have.
Oh.
And that is fearlessness.
Ooh, wiggle, yes.
And that's an important one in life because a lot of people, you know, Peter... Again, this is a different part.
Oh, I know Peter. Yeah.
You know, this is. I'm sure you already said. You already changed the word from masterful to your own word. So you understand. You know, Peter. We're living in times where it's very hard not to be afraid of what's going on, and to buy into the fear, and to look at your television set at all the disasters, and go, oh my God, whichever disaster is going on at the moment. I won't go into what includes because I don't want to get too political here. But
no, that's fine. Believe me. If you know me, you know that for many reasons I hate Bush, if you know what I'm saying. So
it's very interesting because I actually received a letter of thanks and congratulations from him for the work I did with the children on 9/11 and for it being on television and all that.
Well, of course he was busy reading to children on 9/11. It took him 10 minutes to put down the book. He was so engrossed.
Right.
Oh, the furry little bunny hopping across the
road.
Don't disturb me. I'm reading here.
Right. And here's something. Here's interesting. Something interesting, Peter. I just got it. That's fun. When I got the letter, I did not honor it as much as one might normally honor it when one gets a letter from the President of the United States. And this is how the Seven Keys helps you to see it in the bigger picture. He was doing his duty of state.
Yeah, duty being the operative term.
Yeah, I mean, sending a letter, that was his duty, you know. He knew about what I was doing. And to separate that from who he might be as politically, who he is politically, and to take the loveliness of receiving a letter from the President of the United States and be pleased about it, apart from how I might feel about him, as a leader. And that, it took a little bit of doing to get to that place.
Well, that's kind of like, you know, John Lennon decided to throw back the OBE, but Paul McCartney kept his. So, different sides of the same coin, I would say.
That's right.
Anyway, Paulette at T. I'm afraid we do have to wrap things up a little bit. But tell us what else you're working on a Harold Arlen show, and what else is coming up in your life?
Well, let me just mention that there's a lady I'm working with named Francesca James, who is a 5-time Emmy Award winner, and she's quite extraordinary. She's brilliant and a wonderful human being, so that's a pleasure.
So what are you collaborating on?
The name of the show being Collaborators.
Sorry.
And other things that I have coming up, I do a lot of one-woman shows where I sing and I do poetry, and I'm such a showbiz kid, Peter, that it's so in my blood, it's from age 3, as you know,
right.
That there are always people who want to have me perform there, whether it's an art center, even a senior center or a concert hall. I've done a lot of traveling. I've been in Japan singing, Mexico a couple winters ago.
I mean, I've only been to Mexico once, but I don't remember a minute of it. And it was, I was in the back. I was actually in the trunk, so I don't really discuss that very often.
You were in a trunk?
I was in the trunk, yes, of the car that was driven by some very naughty friends of mine. Oh, it was fun, but
right over the border and back.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I don't discuss it very often, but it was fun. Well, Paulette, it has just been fabulous talking with you and finding out about your life and the people you know. It's just marvelous. We definitely have to do this again. So thank you so much for being with me, Peter Fitzgerald, on Dave's Gone By.
Anyway, thanks for the wiggles and your good personality, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Peter.